On this episode of the Autumn Windbags, we ask, what's the problem here? Derek Carr's play or Josh McDaniels' play calling? We preview Raiders versus Titans, talk about the Justin Heron Patriots trade, and a bunch of other Raiders news as well. And we love when you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares.
The Raiders!
Caught! Touchdown! Raiders!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto.
Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. RJ Clifford, Juan Soto, let's have some fun today. I will be hopping on a plane Saturday to Nashville, Tennessee to attend Raiders versus Titans. Sister lives out there. I have the weekend off from work. The Raiders are in town to play this. Stars align perfectly.
You're beautiful, vivacious, talented.
Beautiful sister in a beautiful city watching a beautiful game, hopefully. I don't know if you can see it over my shoulder, but that is a Raiders balloon. The wife got it like week one. It's just kind of been floating around. The baby loves balloons. If we lose to the Titans, I am going to physically take a knife and pop it to metaphorically describe the balloon bursting of the Raiders season. If we lose three in a row and two of those losses come to the Cards and the flailing Titans, we've yet to play a team with a win.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, going 0-2 when you have 17 games is not nearly as bad as going 0-2 when you have 16 games. Mm-hmm. But going 0-3 with 17 games somehow is worse than going 0-2 with 16 games, if that makes any sense. Because you just – math. That third – it's just
– that new math.
We can't go 0-3, man. We just can't.
Can't do it. We'll look ahead here in a second. For our question of the day, we will pin it down in the comments section. You guys let us know what you think. What's the biggest reason the Raiders are currently winless at 0-2? Now, there is no one answer, right? You don't have a team this talented. You don't give up a 20-point lead and have it all be because of one thing, right? There's multiple bad things have to happen for you to blow a 20-point lead and be down 0-2 in the season. But for the sake of argument, so we can pinpoint one thing, maybe it's 60% of the problem, maybe it's as small as 10% of the problem because there's 80 other things, right? What do you think is the biggest reason the Raiders are currently 0-2? Soto, you go first.
I just think inconsistency, and that's across the board. In the second half, out of the three main reasons why we lost the game last week, I think it goes – offensive execution, offensive game plan, and then the defense is the third one. Like if this was a murder, right? The guy who had the gun and gave it to the shooter who actually shot and killed the guy who brought the gun, that is the offensive game plan.
The accessory to the murder.
Yeah. The offensive execution was the dude that actually executed the guy. If that makes any sense.
That's the first-degree murderer.
That's exactly.
I watched a lot of Law & Order, so I can translate this for everybody. Yeah.
The defense is like the third guy they gave the gun to hide.
Got it. Accessory after the fact.
After the fact. Like he's still guilty. Dun, dun, he's still part dun, of it, dun, 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 but not as bad as the other two.
Dun, 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 dun. Yeah. One of them was kind of put in a position. He's like, hey, bro, bail me out. You got to bail me out, bro. And instead of like actually driving it, like getting to a boat and going out into the lake and throwing it out, he just like tossed it in a sewer out in front of his apartment. And some like
he put it into the bottom of his hamper. No one's gonna find it here. Yeah.
Some city worker finds it the next day, you know. And that would be the opening scene of Law and Order. There's some like city worker like under the sewer, just being like, "Oh, my wife is making lasagna again tonight. Oh, she's the worst cook ever." Like, what's that over there?
Oh, that's gleaming in the night.
Right, it's like a Beretta. I'm going to go along your lines and say offensive, not play calling exclusively, not scheme exclusively, not even really game plan exclusively. I would say offensive coordination. And what I mean by that is it's casting. I'm kind of cheating because we're trying to point to one thing, but I'm casting a wide umbrella. Mm-hmm. It's, I think, a brand new offensive scheme, which is tough on its own, right? New coach, some new players. Execution of said scheme, communication of said scheme, play calling of said scheme, the entire package of executing something new, right? And that, of course, falls on several players, mostly falls on the coaching staff, but it's a good mixture of the two. Example is, you know, in week one when Derek was playing so terrible, Josh McDaniel should have been like, okay, I need to adjust. Carr's just not doing it today. Let's do some more play action. Let's do some screens. Let's run the ball. Let's try it, you know, let's change it up. So just like five-step drop and having Carr just have to carry the game, right? Like Carr should have played better. The game plan should have been better. The adjustments should have been better. But that entire coordination isn't working. Little pockets are working. Devontae will go nuts. Waller will keep being open. Carr will have a great half. Our line will block in spurts really well. But it's not, there's no grease in between all those wheels. It's like one kind of goes and then one kind of goes and then one, like, they're never all coordinating. It's like it's not jiving together. And it's not leaving the defense off of this. But we went into this season saying, all right, this offense is going to carry this team, right? The offense is going to carry this team.
That's where the money was.
Brilliant play caller, which we'll get to in a little bit. We've got this, you know, Pro Bowl quarterback and the best receiver in football and Pro Bowl running back, two other Pro Bowl targets. It's like, this is going to carry it. And when that doesn't happen, and it's not all the offensive line's fault, big chunk of it, which we'll get to, but it's not all just this person, this unit, this play. It's just the complete coordination of the offense is just not cohesive.
Yeah, they look disjointed and they look unsure. And there is something that Josh McDaniel said after the first loss is they have to learn, you know, they have to win while they're learning.
Yeah.
And part of that is executing the play that's called. And That was something that was a little bit, I mean, as bad as things got in the first game, we were still in a position to win despite the turnovers, despite, you know, some of the things going wrong early in the game. Last week, we should have won that game. We gave it away. And there was for whatever reason, we got super conservative offensively. And we didn't execute the plays that were called. So it didn't really mean, if the execution was the same, it doesn't matter what play you call. Your execution is bad. So that has to take some part of it too.
So that's the question of the day. What's the biggest reason the Raiders are 0-2? It could be a scheme. It could be a coach. It could be a player. It could be a unit. It could be because you didn't burn a Justin Herbert jersey before the season started and you're very superstitious. Whatever reason you've got, right? You didn't have your pregame 12-pack of Modelo beforehand.
You didn't open your beer with your mom's lucky machete.
Whatever it may be. What's the reason the Raiders are currently 0-2?
What movie is that from? Pin it, answer it below.
That one I don't know.
Ooh, good. I'll tell you after the show.
I'm going to have to take my guess in the comments section as well. All right, we keep looking back, and we'll do it one more time before we look forward. The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Raiders home opener against the Cardinals. Up 20-0 at the half. End up falling in overtime. There was some good. Let's start with the good.
Yeah. So on the good side, we're going to start with the good like we always do. Ladies and gentlemen, our first half offense. First half offense, 4 possessions, 4 scores, 20 points. It did seem like 4 scores in 7 years ago that we actually played a good half. And that first half was a good half.
Isn't it crazy how the end of the game feels like yesterday, but that first half feels like 20 years ago?
A year ago, dude. It feels so long
ago. There's a 2-hour difference between the two.
Damn, it feels so long ago that we were clicking. But yeah, man, the offense was rolling. Things were working. The run game was, you know, offering different options for us.
Our wide receivers were like college open, like consistently wide open. I was like, they can't cover any of our guys,
dude. The Carr's first long pass to Matt Collins was in between three guys, perfect on a rope on a long third down after the first series. Carr completed a short pass, or it was a run. Carr got sacked the second play. And then the third play on third down, Carr roped one to Matt Collins. It was a beautiful pass. Mm-hmm. And everything just got better from there. And, yeah, that first half was bitching, man. It was cool.
Great scheme. Good play calling.
Good execution. Yeah.
We gave up a sack, but other than that, it was semi-decent pass blocking. Like,
yeah, he got time. Carr scrambled. Carr escaped the pocket to complete passes. So, I mean, some of the things that we had talked about the week before about him being so rigid in the pocket. That was all a distant memory during the first half. And then just like, a Michael Myers movie, Friday the 13th, you know, just when you think he's gone, it comes right back. Moving on, not only was the whole offense good in the first half, but Derek Carr specifically had a really good first half. So here's his first half numbers. 18 of 24, 75% completion rate, 210 yards, two touchdowns.
Yeah.
That's 8.75 yards per attempt. That's important because he's throwing, that means he's pushing the ball down the field.
Oh, I just had my first real orgasm of the season.
Yeah. Anything close to nine, guys, like around, average is like 7.5 to 8-ish around there, 7.5. When you get close to nine, that's fucking damn good. So 8.75 yards per attempt is pretty good. He's pushing the ball down the field.
That's Josh McDaniels play calling and scheming at its best too. Because some of our receivers were so open, and Carr was playing great, right? Hitting them in stride, a couple tough passes. That shot to Waller in the corner of the end zone was beautiful.
Yep.
There were some really great passes, but so many guys were just wide fucking open. And
like that Devontae Adams touchdown design was fucking beautiful.
His tits, right? Devontae had a slow day, but that was a clean.
Get your biggest receiver out there to try to just like run an out pattern, basically like a flat, and have him come right underneath, and it was perfect.
And how about the greatest stat of them all in a Derek Carr game? Not one turnover. Not one, Derek. Yes. That a baby.
Yes. Yes.
That's the thing. That's the one. Not one. We should have a parade. We should do something special every time Derek has a game with no turnovers. No fumbles. No fumbles lost. No fumbles dropped. No interceptions. Beautiful.
Almost no yards, too, in the second half. We'll get to that, though. all right, moving on. So now I'm going to preface these next three guys. The reasons why their tackle totals were so high is because they couldn't get off the field in the second half, and they were just tackling guys that were making yards and first down. So, but it's the stats of the stats. Divine Diablo, 15 tackles, 6 solo. So great job for Divine Diablo, who's all over the field. Another linebacker, Jayon Brown, pushed into starting duties due to the injury to Denzel Perryman. Mm-hmm. Acquitted himself nicely. 12 tackles, 8 solo. Jonathan Abram, again, tackling machine, 11 tackles, 9 solo. Move on to your boy Mad Max. 4 tackles, 1 solo. 4 pressures, 2 hurries, 1 tackle for loss, stat filler from the defensive line. And my last one is, go ahead, sir.
Well, because Max is the only one doing anything on defensive line.
Well, yeah, really, honestly, I mean, shit. Daron Harmon, back-to-back plays in overtime. Those are some nice plays. He had open field tackle on a runner on a play where it was, I mean, if he would have let James Conner go, that would have been a long run for him. And also on the last pass play for the Cardinals in overtime, the ball was completed. It was in the receiver's hands. He was just needed to turn and start running, both feet down. But Daron Harmon went over there and knocked the ball out. That's it. They had the punt. So great job to Daron Harmon. Back-to-back plays in overtime.
Weird game for our defense, considering we had some big starters out, right? It's almost like Denzel Perryman is our run-stopping linebacker, and so it was almost like we're not going to miss him that much in a game like that one where the Cards couldn't run the ball at all. If we don't have him against Nashville, that could be
an issue. That's going to be tough, yeah.
That could be different, right? But then no Tremont Merrick, no Arnett. I mean, we were down to the nitty-gritty at at DB, and they played really well considering there was almost zero pass rush, really.
Yeah.
It's Murray threw 49 times, and we had a bunch of backups. Like, I mean, Robertson, like, was we were 50-50 if he was going to make the squad, and he's been starting an outside corner and playing pretty well. Like, it's I mean, we thought the DBs would be our second weakest unit, right? O-line weakest, DBs could be second weakest.
So
they're
D-line,
beat up,
man,
and holding up.
The D-line, as a group, the D-line is what's really letting us down right now defensively.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that we have to take into account, too, Diablo and Brown had a lot of tackles, but where were those tackles being made? Are they making them closer to the line of scrimmage like Denzel Perryman does? Are they being that hammer? Or are they kind of like getting pushed back a little bit and grabbing a guy after a, you know, 5-6 yard gain?
Mm-hmm.
All right, moving on. That was the good.
Credit to Patrick Graham for our DBs playing as well as they are.
That's his specialty, man. It's the secondary. And it's been playing much better. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're going to have a good, you're going to have a bad. The bad. Our second half defense. So look, I understand what you guys are going to say. They were on the field a lot, blah, 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 this and that. But as great of a job as we did in the first half, scoring 20 points, in the second half, the Cardinals scored 23 points. So, yeah. Also, 2 two-point conversions in the fourth quarter. I know they were already dusted, but goddamn. That one that lasted like 30 seconds, the defensive tackles were just sitting there at one point, not even trying to chase them. So
there were multiple plays. Like, there were like 6 or 7 plays where if the defense would have just tackled Kyler Murray, the game's over. Game's over. Like, there was like, remember, it was like week 18 last year against the Chargers, where if we just stopped one of their fourth and longs, like, the game's over, right? Yeah. Like, we either win in regulation or overtime ends. They had to get like 7 fourth and longs. That was the same thing this season, but with Kyler Murray, just tackle him one time, tackle him. And it's not even like he had that many yards. He only had 28 yards, but he got the 2-point conversions. He got first downs when he needed them. Like, that's just tackle him one time.
It was a scrambling to throw passes. And what really irritates me about the 2-point conversion, where at one point the defensive tackles were just standing there and not really chasing him. Are you going to, if you're a defensive tackle, are you going to catch Kyler Murray? No. What you are going to do is you're going to force him to one side of the field where he becomes more predictable for your teammates to then tackle him. If he's able to just run around free, the defense doesn't know where he's going to go. He has a lot more opportunity, a lot more options to run, and it makes it a little bit more difficult, and that's what happened. And he went and scored a couple two-point conversions. So also in the bad, penalties. After being so clean in the preseason and in the first game, 10 penalties for 68 yards, a couple of bad ones, a couple of really suspect ones as well. But yeah, overall, 10 penalties for 68 yards.
And that was the big reason Josh McDaniels gave for the offense sputtering, was penalties. He's like, well, we ended up in, you know, first and long, second and long. It's kind of a cop-out, but there's some truth to it. And again, it just like jumps in the face of last week when we had 3 total penalties, technically 1 on defense, but that was that BS roughing the passer that the Nate Hobbs got. Like, it was like, that was complete trash call.
Yeah.
And that's turned around. Like, we thought, okay, that's the thing that's going to keep that. What Josh McDaniels in the quote unquote Patriot way should do is discipline up this squad a little bit. And I guess it was temporary.
Well, also you have to look at too, is we had a lot of backups playing. I mean, offensive line, there's nothing but backups on the right side. But, you know, you had the starting right guard had to play center, which he did a decent job. He gave up a hurry and he gave up pressure. You know, Parham did a decent job. Run blocking, that's, you know, we have to take a look at a couple things. Hopefully I'm able to put this game film, because NFL Plus, you suck. You suck, NFL Plus. You're supposed to have that game fill out by Tuesday. No later than Tuesday, and it's never out in time. So you suck, NFL Plus. Get your shit together.
Lock NFL negative, more like.
Yeah, NFL negative.
NFL
bitch.
Minus.
All right. On to the next part of the bad. Our second half strategy. not only offensively, but defensively as well. We seem to be a little bit more laxed. We didn't really, in that third quarter and into the fourth quarter, we weren't blitzing as much as we did in the first half. It's like we just changed completely. If we would just keep, I think if we would just kept doing the same thing, at least you're doing what your game plan is. You're doing what you plan to do the entire game instead of trying to switch gears. And when you switch gears and it doesn't work, it's like, dude, why don't we just do what we practiced all week? It just doesn't make sense to me. I don't know. Maybe that's just because I'm an idiot and I don't coach in the NFL.
Well, I think it's partly that. I think also, a couple things. Like, it was early fourth quarter, we go three and out, and it was three straight passing plays, and we burned 9 seconds. I get, stay aggressive. Let's not just run, right? Let's not run the, you know, let's stay aggressive. But, like, you burned 9 seconds?
Yeah, but also each one of those passing plays was, like, 5 yards or less. Mm-hmm. You know, each one of those passes were short passes. We weren't even trying to push down the field anymore.
And also, the Cards adjusted. Like, they went so blitz heavy in the first half and just basically stopped blitzing in the second. And the offense never adjusted, right? Like, blitz Derek Carr. Even Derek Carr's biggest critics are like, he's really good pre-snap. He's smart pre-snap. And he's got Devontae Hunter.
He's calling it all out,
right? He can see it coming. And he's got Devontae, Waller, and Hunter that can all get open in like less than 2 seconds. Yeah. So he's got the perfect weapons to just three-step drop, 1,000, get the ball out, 5 yards, let him go, right? Perfect offense, perfect personnel for it, and they did it. Once they stopped blitzing, it's like, oh, they're dropping seven. They're not as open anymore. Oh, what are we going to do? And I'm still getting rushed, right? And there's just no adjustments by the play calling, by McDaniels, by Carr. Whosever job it is to make those adjustments didn't.
Well, also, too, is the two biggest plays potentially that we had in the second half were the two longest throws of the second half. It was the pass interference to Mac Hollins was a big play. It set up our field goal. And the miscommunication, which we're going to talk about a little bit later, between Carr and Devontae Adams would have set up a chip shot field goal. Those are the two times he pushed the ball down the field in the second half, and one of them should have been completed, and the other one gave us a pass interference to set up our field goal, our lone score in the second half. Yeah. So not being aggressive is just not going to work for us. We have too many athletes, and we're too good at skill positions to not continue to be aggressive. All righty. We heard the good. We heard the bad. Now for the ugly. First part of the ugly, Derek Carr's second half. This is probably one of the worst second halves I've seen a quarterback have without turning the ball over. He was 7 for 15. That's 46% for 42 yards. That is a 2.8 yards per attempt. That is absolutely terrible. I don't know if I've ever seen something like that. That is bad. Worse than bad. That's why it's in the ugly. That is just not a good representation of what Carr can do against this defense, which was happening in the first half. Just whatever you want to call it, whatever led into it, his second half was ugly.
And at least like partly not adjusting to them not blitzing, right? That's part of it. I think it also exposed a little bit a grander issue of just a new offense, new guys, right? Like when guys are blitzing and guys are wide open, you don't, you know, it's when you're dealing in inches and not yards, where the timing, I've thrown this exact pass to Hunter 50 times because we've been in the same offense for three seasons. You know, that's where you thread the needle with those details. That's where you kind of like give Waller a little side eye. He gives you a side eye because, you know, the linebacker's a shade inside, right? That experience that comes with being in this with the same guys in the same offense for a long time, that's when those tiny elements look huge. That's when molehills turn into mountains. And that's a big chunk of what happened in that second half.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like the whole Pennywise and Pound Foolish thing. Like, okay, yeah, they're dropping back a lot. Let me just dink and dunk. Mm-hmm. Well, when they're waiting for that, when they want you to do that, and you stop being aggressive, it doesn't really work out for you. And honestly, that's where I think a lot of the times, I mean, what does Carr do when teams do that normally? Like if it's like the last drive of a game, right? It's pretty much the same defense. They're hanging back, and Carr still finds a way to move the ball down the field, right? To get those last second field goals. It just was, I mean, just poor execution is all it was. Just poor execution. And so we've seen Carr be able to complete passes against a prevent style defense or a drop back defense. It just, he just didn't do it in the second half. Second ugly, Hunter Renfrow, goddamn, two fumbles on consecutive receptions. Now, there were consecutive plays. There was that next play coming up in between, but two consecutive times that he was the receiver of the pass, completed the pass, and he fumbled. The first one, miraculously, I should have put fucking Foster Moreau on the good. He had a couple of nice plays in the first half, but that fumble, he wrangled that ball away from two defenders, and he wasn't even in the play. The two defenders that had the ball were the ones that made the tackle, and Foster Moreau came in there and ripped the ball away, so great job on there. The second one was just god-awful.
Chronic issue that we should really be worried about with Hunter Renfrow?
I believe so. It's a lot of fumbles, man.
What is it? Nine fumbles in the last season and a half? Eight?
Season and a half? What are you talking about? Season and a couple
season
games.
Plus two? 20 games.
Yeah, he had five games last year. It's definitely an issue. It's an issue that needs to be addressed. It's an issue that we can't push under the table and push away because we all love Hunter Renfrow so much because he's the plucky underdog and blah 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 and this and that. Like, no, dude, hang on to the fucking ball.
That's so many fumbles for
a ton of fumbles.
That's a shit ton of fumbles for a running back who touches the ball 20 times a game. This is the number three target on the offense, and he's fumbling at that. That's like a quarterback fumbling 50 times a season with how many times Hunter Renfrow touches the ball.
If Hunter Renfrow was a running back, he would not play. Yeah. Let's just put it that way. If he fumbled this, and then this is getting more touches too. This is getting like 12, 15, 17 touches with passes and everything a game. If he's getting that many touches and he's fumbling this often, he wouldn't play. But at the receiver position, when you're getting maybe six touches a game, maybe four, and he's fumbling that often, yeah, it just can't happen, man. It's just one of those things where it's something's got to be done. And I don't know the answer to it. I don't know what we need to do. I don't know if it's just something that's in his head.
It hasn't stood out till now because we've been recovering him pretty well. It's been really lucky. But then now it's like, you're like, oh, he cost us the game. And you look at, oh, shit, he's been fumbling all the time. How have we not seen this?
Fumbling left and right. Yeah, I mean, I think the one fumble he lost last year, I believe, was against the Chiefs. I'm not exactly 100% positive on that, but I think he only lost one fumble last year. But man, it's a problem. He fumbled and recovered against
Tiny Hands.
Yeah, Smell Like Cabbage. What movie is that from?
That one I know. Comment down below. Hard because he's got the wiggle where you're like, yeah, go. But then he gets just like demolished because he's my size. And the ball falls out of his stubby little hands.
Stubby little hands.
Get your shit together, Hunter.
Get it together, bro. Come on. You can do it. You can do it. All right. Last part of the ugly. This was the game winner. That wasn't. The play before Hunter Renfrow's fumble that was returned for six was a Carr Adams kind of a inside post, skinny post, where Derek Carr felt that Devontae Adams should have sat in front of the zone, in front of the safety, whereas Devontae Adams kept going and the ball was almost intercepted. So we almost turned the ball over in three consecutive plays. We were trying to lose this game and goddammit, we succeeded.
That just shows our go get him attitude.
Yeah.
We're committed to something. God damn it.
We're going to make sure we get it done.
You're going to turn this ball over and you will score in overtime.
God dang. So, that catch, he would have been tackled around the 25-yard line. That would have been a chip shot field goal. I think we would that ball would have been caught. We would have trotted out Carlson right then and there, kicked the game winning field goal.
Yep.
But yeah, it was a miscommunication. Who knows who was it was against? But what really is a telling part of that play was Davante Adams' body language after the pass fell incomplete. He kind of did one of these, like threw his arms out, tilted his head back, probably said, "I missed Aaron Rodgers." That's what the video clips were saying. But that was the game sealer right there. And unfortunately, it was an ugly time to have such a poor communication between the two guys that are throwing to each other every freaking, you know, offseason. There's a difference. There's a difference between killing and shredding a team in joint practices, because you have the red jersey on and you know you're not going to get hit. Mm-hmm. It's a big difference between that and live rounds during the game.
The silver lining to that is that that's something that will absolutely get better with time, right? Mm-hmm. It's not a chronic issue. It's not like, well, these guys just will never get on the same page. That's not the case.
Very unfortunate time for it to happen.
Yeah. All right. That's the good, the bad, and the ugly. Let's take a closer look at Derek Carr. Josh McDaniels made a comment, and he was asked about the changing offense and at a press conference this week. Here's what he had to say.
Each week's a little different, you know, and it may not be the same exact stuff that we're doing offensively, defensively, or in the kicking game that we did last week. And I think for some people, and again, I wasn't here, I haven't been where everybody else has been, so I don't really know. But I know that for some people in different systems with different coaching staffs, that's not necessarily as big of a thing. You know, you kind of keep doing what you do and try to apply it each week to the opponent. But, you know, sometimes we shift a little bit more than others. And I think that's the new part for all of our guys. But I think they really like it. I think they enjoy it. There's a challenge inherent in it. But Derek certainly has a great outlook on it. And I have a lot of confidence in him.
Now, Josh McDaniels isn't going to come out and say, John Gruden doesn't change, and I do. But that's basically what he's saying. That's what he's saying is.
And we've all said the same thing.
Yeah, and he's, you know, coaches aren't going to shit on other coaches. But that's basically him saying, like, yeah, Gruden had a massive playbook, but that's what he did. This is our plays. This is what we do. And I'm more fluid. We're flexible. Like, we change the scheme. We change our scheme to the defense every single game, and. It kind of sounded like he was speaking in generalities about the whole team, but then mentioned Carr specifically at the end. Mm-hmm. And it's like he enjoys the process, but that's not what they did last season.
Yeah, and I mean, he was asked specifically about Carr and how, JMD was asked about Carr and his comfort level with Derek Carr's comfort level with the offense. That's how the whole thing got started, and it was very telling. The very last part. He said he has a good attitude towards it, and I'm confident in him. He's not saying he's got it down or, you know, none of that stuff. He's like, oh, he's got a good attitude towards it. But, you know, the reason why I brought this up and the first thing that popped into my mind is how poorly Derek Carr starts off with new offensive schemes and offensive coordinators. Well, if you're changing the game plan and changing a lot of stuff week to week, is he going to be able to kind of keep up with that? That's not really where he's, you know, where he's thrived. He's thrived in a single system, second, third year in a system. That's when he's really had his best seasons. But man, I don't know. Is it that was a kind of an aha moment for me, because I mean, a lot of people who are staunch Carr backers who feel he does very little to no wrong. One of the things is, well, you know, new offensive coordinator, he doesn't do as well, but he gets better as time goes on. Well, when that better as time goes on changes every single week, how is that going to play out long term?
Well, I don't think it's that drastic. I mean, he'll, you know, McDaniels makes more adjustments per game than Gruden does, but it's not like an entire playbook, right? Like, it's still, there's still themes and fundamentals and strategies. And to me, like, that's certainly part of it. But to me, it's more like not just memorizing the plays, but making sure you're on the same page with your wide receivers under that umbrella, right? Like, it's one thing to be like, all right, Devontae, all right, Waller, all right, Hunter, here are your routes under this play call. And it's another thing to be like I mentioned earlier, like, oh, this corner's pressing a little bit. Devontae, you know what I mean? Like Devontae, like, hey, let's go for it, right? It's like, and Devontae and Derek talked about this very specifically preseason, right? Where they're like, McDaniels gives us that option to be able to do that. And like he cares about like what we think about it. We're veterans. I think that's the bigger issue, is the communication between the wide receivers and the quarterback under the system, as opposed to just brick and mortar, XYZ, this is how you do it. It's the subtleties and the inches, not yards, that exist inside of that system.
Yeah, the way they got Devontae Adams the ball so many times against the Chargers were on choice routes. And that's Carr shit. Like, Carr knows fucking choice routes up the ass. That's the majority of what Gruden ran. It's a big staple of the West Coast offense. Anyway, a West Coast style of offense, basically. That last throw, that's not a choice route. You run the route, and you throw the route. So that leads me to believe it's a little bit heavier on the Carr side than the Devontae side. But there's no way to tell. There's no way to tell whose it was.
It could also be like, is this a really skinny post? Is it a harder post? Do you run that post at a different angle based on the safety? You know what I mean? It's like, that's the miscommunication. I think that's the biggest issue. Like, it could have been Carr just missed, right? Carr just missed, and that was Devontae's frustration. Devontae's frustration could have been like, ah, fuck, I should have tightened that angle, right? Or,
well, one thing too.
Read the safety. I was going to run this way, not that, right? It's like,
yeah,
that's what it feels like to me. It's more that than like Carr not memorizing everything.
Well, also too is, for whatever reason, it seemed to me that Devontae turned his head on the route really late. It was a really deep route, and he had a lot of room prior to turning his head where he was pretty much wide open. That if he would have turned around, Carr would have hit him, and he would have had no problem maybe getting the ball at like the 35-yard line-ish around there. But he turned his head a little bit later, and I mean, that was the route. Maybe a little bit more of a more time running that play. You know, they could say, hey, remember the Arizona game? If they're sagging that back on you, just cut off the route in the middle and turn around, and I'll get it to you right then and there. But I mean, again, it's the live rounds. It's the reps with live rounds. No red jersey. It's, you know, put up or shut up time. And we need to have those live reps. And that's one of the things that helps me feel like things will get a better and smooth out is, you know, the more live reps that they get, the better they're going to get at this offense.
Well, the biggest issue of this offense is the offensive line. Well, the easiest one to like look at personnel wise is the major problem. And the Raiders made a very huge step, massive game-changing trade. Made a little adjustment. They traded for the Patriots, of course. Who else? Offensive tackle Justin Heron. They swapped some 2024 picks, so we get a 7th and Heron. We sent a 6th to the Pats. He's only played in 28 games, started in 10, so he's just kind of a depth guy. 6th-round pick in 2020, so he still has 2 more years on his rookie deal. So very, very cheap guy. Add some depth. Normally, this would be a nothing trade. Like, it wouldn't make any headlines at all. But based on the right side of our line, he may be a starter on Sunday. Like, just based on how poorly the right side of our line, specifically right tackle, has been. Like, when Brandon Parker out for the season drastically changes your line, your line's got some problems, right? That's why this is like, and I've been saying this whole time, it's like, look, just scrap heap dudes, like waiver wire guys on the line, like commit some resources, make some trades. Like, this isn't a big one, but it's a baby step in the exact right direction, at least, right? Like, it's someone familiar, someone that could potentially start on how bad our line is. Like, this is somebody who could start, and just kind of now, instead of a 7-man rotation, it's an 8-man rotation. Like, I don't know what they're gonna do.
Well, the thing is JMD wouldn't trade, and Mick Ziegler basically wouldn't trade for a guy that they're not comfortable with. They feel that Justin Heron is an upgrade to what they have, whether that be a starter, whether that be a depth guy, whatever. I said it's earlier, when it comes to the offensive line, you don't always need to have these studs. You just need to have steady Eddie. If you got steady players on the offensive line, that you know what you're going to get, and they're not going to make mistakes. I think that's what we're going to get in Justin Heron. We're going to get a steady Eddie type of guy who's not going to make the big mistake. He's not going to make the dumb penalty like we saw Illuminor and we saw Munford make. He's not going to do that. He may be not going to get out in front on a delayed screen and pick off that safety for an extra 10-yard gain. But is he going to be steady? Hopefully.
And we need that. Seven different offensive linemen have given up pressures on our O-line. There's only five offensive linemen on the field at a time. Like, they've rotated enough guys where just about everyone's given up a pressure and six penalties. So that's the other part of like, all right, maybe we're probably not going to get a Pro Bowler at this point in the season. Now, it's certainly possible, right? Trade for somebody, depending on how much resources you want to allocate. But how about someone who's not going to give us false starts? Right? How about start there. And hopefully that's what this guy's going to do for us.
Yeah. Hopefully he's a steady Eddie type of guy, a steady influence, maybe a guy that knows the offense, knows the scheme, knows the calls, and is going to be able to help the rest of the team as well.
All right. So the Raiders are heading to Nashville on Sunday. They're -2.5-point favorites against the Titans. We were 5.5 last week, 2.5 this week. So obviously the bookmakers think their two-game losing streak's worse than our two-game losing streak. And that's fair to say, right? Like, we were within one score in both games. The Titans got obliterated by the Bills. Like, absolutely obliterated by Buffalo. And, you know, Buffalo is arguably the best team in football.
They look the best. Jesus.
We played arguably the best team in football in the Chargers. And, you know, we're within a score, right? Didn't play well, but within a score. So, bookmakers like our chances against Nashville. And for a couple reasons. Derrick Henry is struggling. I know this because I have him on fantasy. The Raiders gave up 5.1 yards per carry against the Cardinals, whereas Derrick Henry's averaged less than 2 yards a carry last week. He had a touchdown against the Bills, but he's just not rolling. And I think the way defenses are attacking him, and I think Patrick Graham is smart enough to see this, is you just can't let him get rolling. Like, once he gets his first 5 yards, that first head of steam, right, he gets the ball like 3 yards in the backfield, gets to the line of scrimmage, gets 2 yards forward, he gets that momentum going, and then you're fucked. If you can stutter him in the backfield, he's really not an out-of-the-gate explosive guy, really. Like, he's crazy once he gets that momentum going, but he just... Like, his 0-60 is nothing compared to his, you know, his mile, right? And so if you can just disrupt him early, he never can really get rolling. And that's going to be the goal.
Hang on. Let me put my...
Uh-oh.
Okay, I'm thinking. Hang on.
Okay.
Okay. I see a lot of run blitzes this week. So it's like instead of the, like, okay... Pin your ears back and tackle the runner on the way to the quarterback. It's going to be the opposite. It's shoot the gap and tackle the quarterback if the running back doesn't have the ball. So we're going to fill those gaps with run blitzes. We're going to force the Titans don't have anything at receiver, man. Robert Woods is coming off an injury. He's not the same. Treylon Burks hasn't shown that he's the guy yet. The reason why Derrick Henry was able to make shit happen is because they had A.J. Brown, and he was stretching the field, and he was making catches all over the place. We see him balling out right now for the Eagles. A.J. Brown was the reason why they had a passing offense and the reason why they were able to run. So because of A.J. Brown, they got Derrick Henry rolling. Because Derrick Henry rolling, then now you load the box up, and you have those matchups with A.J. Brown or the other receivers. They don't have that receiving threat now. So you're able to load the box up without – really any serious repercussions, because you're not
zero repercussions.
Yeah.
Ryan Tannehill had 117 yards last week.
And that's the game plan, man, is shoot the gaps, run blitz, don't let Derrick Henry get ahead of his team, make him shuffle his feet a little bit, be a sure tackler, don't try to get the big hit, just wrap him up and gang tackle him and, you know, force Ryan Tannehill to beat you. And if Ryan Tannehill beats us, we have more problems than just what we talked about earlier in this game or earlier in this show.
This should be a huge bounce back game for Devontae Adams. Stephon Diggs had 12 receptions, 148 yards, and 3 touchdowns. Like, you know where they're going with the ball, right? Like, you know that Diggs is going to be the number one target. You scheme to stop him, and they couldn't. So this, there's no reason why Devontae can't have a similar game that Diggs had last week. He's a better quarterback, and there's you have way more weapons for the Titans to worry about than the Bills. Not way more, but you have more. You have better overall passing targets than the Bills.
Yeah, and we have the players defensively in our secondary to handle their receivers. I'm very confident. As shaky and as injury riddled and as, you know, unproven as some of our players are in the secondary, I think we have enough to handle what they have offensively at receiver as pass catchers. And definitely we have enough to handle what they have at quarterback. So it's all about being sure tacklers, shooting your gaps, staying disciplined, you know, watching for little funky shit like reverses and things like that when you're over pursuing the ball carrier. Just stay sound. Keep everything in front of you. Tannehill's not going to freaking thread the needle and beat you like that. Mm-hmm.
Injury report. We managed to go through preseason really well. We've been getting kind of beat up in these last few games. Andre James, Trevon Moehrig, Bilal Nichols, Denzel Perriman, Hunter Renfro, all starters. All did not participate in Wednesday's practice. Chandler Jones is non-injury related rest. He's just a veteran, takes a Wednesday off. Well, that's 5 starters and two and a half critical starters for stopping Derrick Henry and Denzel Perriman and Bilal Nichols.
Bilal Nichols, yeah. Well, I mean, Chandler Jones took a rest on Sunday too.
Right? He should be very well rested.
He really didn't do much in that game.
He's taking a rest all season.
Oh, God damn, man. He needs to freaking kick it into gear. Andre James is another one, too. Although Parham did a good job spelling him at center, that takes Parham away from the guard spot, which he did pretty well the first game. So, yeah, man, it's not a true backup for backup. It's like you're just kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul. Mm-hmm. You're taking a starter from another position and filling that gap, but then you have a backup at another position.
Ready to do some what a winbacks?
You know it.
King Guillotine.
Ooh.
Sweet name. When a team has this much talent, we lose like this. It is a clear indication that a play caller's talent does not match up to the players. McDaniels is either pass heavy or run heavy, no in between. He's either run heavy, really? He's a good offensive coordinator when Belichick is there. Hopefully he sees it's him who is the problem.
Oh, King Guillotine.
He's been run heavy with the Pats when he needs to be. He hasn't been run heavy with us.
Yeah. King Guillotine, although I do think that McDaniels needs to know his situation a little bit better, maybe not make as drastic a swing with his play calling and his game planning, you know, get the team comfortable with certain things and not have such major swings, especially the swing that we saw from the first half of the Cardinal game to the second half and as far as scheme and play calling goes. Honestly, it's the execution of the offense, and that includes penalties, it includes drops, it includes fumbles, it includes interceptions, it includes bad passes, it includes bad routes, it includes all that shit. It's you have to execute properly in order for any play to succeed. And not only was the scheme suspect in the second half against the Cardinals, but combine that with poor execution, and it doesn't matter what you're calling if their execution is bad.
When you've got Devontae Waller and Hunter, sometimes it's just like kiss method. Just keep it simple, stupid, right? Like,
yeah.
You're going to cover all three of these dudes? All right, here's our routes. Here's the plan, right?
Dude, if they would have gotten one more first down, the game would have been over. Mm-hmm. There wouldn't have been enough time for the Cardinals to score if we would have gotten one more first down, but we couldn't.
Fidencio Rodriguez. Carr doesn't deserve a starting job. Ooh. So you cannot blame the coach. Any quarterback that can't move the ball after having a 20-point lead, and year after year, there's always a constant failure. Overall play by Carr. The next move is to sit Carr down and give Stedham the chance to prove himself. I'm going to keep putting these up every single week when people are seriously, non-sarcastically, Raider fans are saying, start Jared Stidham over Derek Carr in with a straight face.
Look, I am critical of Carr, and I feel I have the right to be because of what I say when I'm critical of him. The things that not just me, but other fans from other teams, the media, scouts, everything that people have said about Carr has really come to the surface these first two games. You know, what did Joey Bosa say? You hit him a couple times and he crumbles. And we saw after he got hit a couple times, you know, he wasn't the same guy. Although we had a chance to win the last game, he fumbled. He has fumble issues. We saw that. You know, he's streaky. He's up and down. If that last Arizona game wasn't an example of how streaky Carr can be, that second half, he wasn't really throwing the ball. He was more like guiding it and flicking it. And he was like, all right, I don't want to overthrow this one. And that's what it just seemed like to me. And I could be as critical of Carr. I could be even more critical if I want to be as far as his play has gone this last two games. With that being said, even with all those issues that Carr has, he's still a much better quarterback than Jared Stidham. There's no, unless Carr cannot physically answer the bell or he looks completely overmatched, you keep rolling with him.
You start Carr over Stidham even if Carr had like a broken left arm. Come on.
This is if he can get out Jehu there, you can play him.
Jehu Dawson. Raiders reminded me of a girl I met in college, playing all tough, talking shit, hard to get, talking about how she had a boyfriend, and then a moment later, we're in the parking lot, we're in my back seat, and she's bent over getting pounded. LOL. I'm not exactly sure what this allegory is supposed to mean, we're not fucking the Raiders right now. Like, we are not enjoying the Raiders in the backseat of their car, right? Like, it's not a – they were playing hard to get and then actually left.
Yeah, I think
if anything, the Raiders are like – if anything, the Raiders are being super slutty and saying like, oh, man, I'm so good at sucking dick. Like, oh, you like – I'm not wearing any panties. And then you're like, all right, you want to go? No. And then they leave. That's for the Raiders.
I kind of get what he's saying.
Giant cock teases.
I gotta get what he's saying. He's saying that we're talking tough at the beginning of the year and we ended up getting fucked. I understand that. But Jehu, I'll say this. Video or it never happened.
we have cameras on our phone for a reason. All right. Well, that's it for us. I will be attending the game in Nashville. I'll take some pictures, take some video. We'll share it with you guys. That means it'll be you and Rory handling post-game duties.
Yes, sir.
Should be handling no problem. But until then, knock on wood if you're with me.